18 months after the September 11th attacks, many Americans remain torn over a key question. Should they give up some civil liberties in pursuit of security? The American Civil Liberties Union has answered that question by defiantly opposing any erosion of civil rights. That position has won the organization new members, but it has also alienated former allies, who say the group may be doing more harm than good by refusing to compromise. As part of an occasional NPR series on civil liberties, Larry Abramson has this report.
9/11 hit close to home at the ACLU. The organization's national headquarters is just blocks from Ground Zero in downtown Manhattan. Now, a year and a half later, the ACLU is still dealing with the aftermath of the attacks.
I know, and if we oppose, it might actually delay more.
In a suite of offices overlooking the East River and the Statue of Liberty, Associate Legal Director Ann Beeson advises colleague Jamil Jaffer on the latest battle with the administration, getting more information about how the Justice Department is using its new powers to wage the war on terror. Until 9/11, Beeson spent much of her time opposing government efforts to censor the Internet. Now she is overwhelmed by distress calls of a completely different nature.
Every single day, numerous times a day, we get new reports of problems, violations, issues, new issues that arise all over the country. We are bombarded with them, literally daily, in a way that it's almost impossible for us to respond to.
Immigrants who fear deportation, citizens who learn they're not allowed to board a plane but can't learn why. For lawyers like Beeson, the challenges, the opportunities are immense.
There doesn't seem to be any end in sight to the government's quest for new powers in the name of national security post 9/11.
This is an area where the ACLU has changed and yet remains the same. The group has long campaigned against new government surveillance powers and defended the individual's right to privacy. But Beeson says working with immigrant communities post 9/11 has changed the way she views her job.
I mean, we had, of course, clients who were seriously afraid of being prosecuted under internet censorship laws that we challenged. That fear didn't even compare to the level of fear that was in the room when I met with these people. And to have them talk about how on a day-to-day basis the government's actions are making them afraid. I mean, they're just afraid to do almost anything. They're afraid to meet with us.
For all of its efforts, it's not clear just how much real headway the ACLU is making. The courts have generally backed the administration's right to conduct this war as it sees fit, to keep certain immigration hearings closed, or to expand the use of wiretaps, to detain enemy combatants without charge. But these setbacks have only helped strengthen the organization's commitment. Thanks to the high profile of civil liberties post 9/11, contributions to the ACLU are up. So is membership. At rallies and public events like this one at Princeton University, ACLU Executive Director Anthony Romero sees a chance to enlist the help of young people.
Think about where you were on September 11th.
Romero is not a podium-pounding rabble-rouser. He speaks slowly, reasonably. He makes his point by creating a foil, Attorney General John Ashcroft, the man who became the ACLU's clearest antagonist when he demanded new powers from Congress shortly after 9/11.
He essentially said, you're with me or you're against me. And if you question me, I'm going to question your patriotism. That those who conjure up the phantoms of liberty, those are his exact words, give ammunition to our enemies, pause to our allies, and diminish our national resolve, exact words. And it was astonishing that he got off scot-free.
Romero says he and others warned Congress that it would be wrong to pass such sweeping legislation in a hurry.
Many of the members of the Congress and staff just told us it doesn't matter. What matters is that we have to enact something.
Since then, the ACLU has fought many court battles against these new powers. Perhaps the biggest successes have come out of court. Conservatives helped the ACLU kill the TIPS program, an aborted government effort to get utility workers and delivery men to call in tips about suspicious neighbors. Congress reined in the Total Information Awareness Program, which would have sorted through consumer data in the search for terrorists. Romero says these are components of a government plan to go after people based on suspicions, not on evidence. But like many Americans, Princeton students like this man remain confused.
So just playing devil's advocate here, if you're not going to allow neighbors to sort of rat out their neighbors, and you're not going to allow the government to mine your data, how are we going to know people's actions and whether or not they're a threat if we're not going to look at their country of origin, etc.?
this is a tough question for the ACLU, which is often better at opposing government programs than it is at suggesting alternatives. Romero says we now know the FBI failed to use the powers it already has. Agents could have searched the computer of terror suspect Zacharias Moussaoui if they'd used those powers correctly.
So you go back to the question, do we need to water down the requirements further on these warrants? Or is it a matter of ineffective or poor law enforcement work? Thanks very much for having me back.
The ACLU's refusal to negotiate these points has kept the organization involved in the civil liberties struggle and kept morale high among members. But this approach has also put off some traditional allies.
I guess they don't accept that something has changed in this country.
Abraham Foxman heads the Anti-Defamation League, which fights anti-Semitism. He says the ACLU's vilification of John Ashcroft simply shuts down legitimate debate about civil liberties post 9/11.
We don't begin with seeing the Department of Justice and this administration as an enemy of the American people, of its safety, security, or civil rights.
The ACLU says its refusal to compromise is the only thing holding back a flood of new government powers. The organization was formed in the outrage over anti-immigrant raids after World War I, gained strength as it unsuccessfully opposed the internment of Japanese Americans during the Second World War. The group sees the current situation as a crisis of similar proportions. Professor Amitai Etzioni of George Washington University says such comparisons just don't fit.
And we, in effect, allow it. We make it easier for the government to dig into such extreme positions when we say that everything they're doing for security is unnecessary, is overbroad. We never met any security device the ACLU can live with except stronger doors for pilots.
At the end of his long day at Princeton, Anthony Romero starts the drive back home to Manhattan. It's 10 o'clock at night, he's clearly tired, and he's still working the cell phone trying to find a birthday party he's supposed to attend.
Mr. Miller, it's lovely to hear your voice.
We talk about whether the organization needs to change its approach, whether the ACLU is making progress even when it loses in court. Romero says his group often has to wait a long time for vindication.
For instance, the ACLU case during Japanese-American internment, when we lost before the U.S. Supreme Court in 1942, that we now talk about the fact that we should never, that the court could never allow the internment of Arab Americans. And the reason why people think that is they think that the court won't ever repeat the mistake it made in 1942.
The American Civil Liberties Union is now gearing up to fight Patriot II. This Justice Department working list of new investigative powers has sparked fierce opposition, even though it's miles away from being even proposed as legislation. The ACLU is leading that effort. In this business, compromise just isn't part of the job description. Larry Abramson, NPR News, New York.